everyone, I'm Mel and I'm your host of the She Dares podcast. She Dares is a community for women to help each other take a break from our daily lives, get inspired, learn from each other and experience new things every day. Every week we get a new guest on the show to talk about their experiences when they pushed themselves to be brave and take a decision. Sometimes things did not go quite as planned, but everything turned out great in the end and most of them say they would never have changed anything. This is what She Dares is all about, taking that one step to do something different to experience new things in life. Today, I'm joined by my mate, Michelle Manetti. She's a DJ, vocalist, promoter, and producer. She's all about creating space and opportunities for other women in the music industry. And she has set up and now promotes a bi-monthly female-focused queer party called Femme Fresh at the Dalston Superstore in London. We talk about how her DJ career started by accident when she didn't get the drama school scholarship she had hoped for, where she is today and how spending 10 years in a rut playing music she hated has led her to pursuing her house music passions all over the world. Okay, we're jumping on Zoom. She's based in the UK and I'm over here in Austria. She's ready, so let's get her on the show. Hey, Michelle, how are you doing? It's good to see you.
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm really good, thanks. Obviously, you know a little bit about what I'm doing at She Dares, and I'm interviewing some awesome women, and you are one of those awesome women in my life. So, I wanted to ask you, has there been, you know, a time where you've stepped out of your comfort zone in your life before?
I mean, there's always times that I step out of my comfort zone. I think every time I go to DJ at work, I step out of my comfort zone because it's such a nerve-wracking job, and especially when you're in front of like so many people that you're in control of this kind of crowd in front of you. And every time I do it, I get so nervous, and it is like slightly stepping out of my comfort zone, especially if I'm playing a new venue with new people, with a new promoter, new club. And every single time it's like nerves and excitement and kind of a mixture of everything.
Yeah.
And a new DJs always come and ask me, does that ever go? And I'm like, no, I'm 22 years in the game. And I still feel those absolute terror before I do a DJ set, especially like the big ones. And my kind of thing is like, the moment that goes is time to give up, because it just kind of means that you don't care anymore.
That's really important, yeah.
And the reason why I get so nervous is because I love my job, and I'm so excited about what I'm doing that I want it to be perfect.
Yeah.
It is kind of stepping out of my comfort zone every single time I go to work, really.
that's cool though, that you get to do that. Do the nerves kind of come like a day before, or is it when they book you?
It's usually like half an hour before I'm going on. Mm. Maybe a day before if it's like a really big gig and I'm playing with someone like that I really love and I really respect. Like half an hour before I'm just about to start my gig, I'm always kind of like, I can't talk to anyone. I get so like this kind of like anxiety that people are trying to talk to me and I'm like, I just literally lose the power of speech.
Yeah, just no, not now.
It's like, no, not now. Just leave me in the corner. But yeah, it's usually that kind of like half an hour, 50 minutes before. And then as soon as I get on the decks, it's fine. And it just kind of washes away. But it's just that initial, oh my God, what am I going to play? What am I going to do here?
I mean, that question that you just said, you know, what am I going to play? Do you have your sets kind of prepped before?
Yes, to a certain extent. So because I play so many different types of music and every single gig that I do requires a different style, because if I'm playing a daytime set on a terrace and a 6 a.m. In a club is so different. And then, you know, I might be playing disco, or I might be playing like a really hard techno. Like I play all sorts. Mm. So I do kind of like need to sort of go through my music, refresh my memory. I'll put like a couple of little folders of like, this is what I might play.
Yeah.
So I've sort of got a backup, but then I've got like three USB sticks with like 270 gigabytes of music on each of them. So I'm like, I've got enough music here. I'm prepared. I know what I'm doing. It's just kind of like finding the flow, and then you get into the flow really, really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the same with anything that you actually fear, right? They always say that the fear is just the maximum point of fear is just before you do something. As soon as you actually do it, it's fine again.
It's fine. Yeah. It's literally the half an hour, 15 minutes beforehand. And then as soon as I'm on the decks, all fear goes, all anxiety goes. And I'm just kind of like, yay, I'm in my element.
What's like the biggest fear? Is it something around like, what if you mess up or what if you play something wrong? Like what questions are going through your mind?
I guess it's kind of like more not about messing up because I know that I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Like I'm 22 years deep. Yeah. I'm pretty confident with my mixing ability and my skill and whatever. But for me, it's kind of like, it's really about definitely wanting to kind of create something really special.
Right. Yeah.
And you can't do that every single time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can, but those really special ones don't happen all that often. Yeah. Like the ones where you know it's like you've really locked into the crowd, you've really got them in front of you, you've really, it's almost like puppetry. When it really works well, it's like I am the puppet master of all these people in front of me. And you can feel that, and you can feel that that kind of really close connection with the crowd. And it will be like one in maybe every 10 gigs where it's like so perfect. And I come off it being like, oh my God, that was the most incredible feeling and enthralling. And so my fear comes with kind of like, or anxiety is like, how do I create that every time?
Yeah.
And every gig that I come away from, I enjoy, and I'm, you know, and even the ones that that maybe don't go as well as I hope they would, there's still endless praise and there's still lots of people dancing in front of me. So I know I'm doing the job properly, but I guess it's just kind of like this very, very self-critical, I want it to be 1,000,000% perfect every time. And I guess, yeah, that's the anxiety of the like, how can I make this absolutely perfect?
Right. Yeah.
And that's the perfectionist in me completely.
Yeah. And I guess there's a lot of things that would influence that as well, right? I mean, the environment, the crowd itself, you know,
completely.
The sounds, the lights, I guess. So
completely. And it is, you know, and it can be, I can play a really similar set to a different crowd and they won't respond in the same way. I mean, obviously like none of my sets are exactly the same, but I can play kind of something fairly similar in a sort of fairly similar vein. And then one crowd will respond amazingly to it and one crowd just won't. Yeah. And it can be the time of day. It can be who's played before me, who's playing after me. It can be how many people in the room. It can be, you know, everything. Yeah, lighting. Yeah, so there's so many different factors completely out of my control as to how well something will go. And all I can do is just go in there and be me and do my thing.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm doing something right because I usually get rebooked to play everywhere that I play. So I'm doing all right.
You're definitely doing all right. Definitely. It's just so interesting, you know, that even rationally, you know, all of those things have control, don't have control over your set, but, you know, can influence your set. And yet still every single time, just before you go on, you still have those fears. Almost that, you know, you want that perfect set.
And I think it is also that, you know, I'm such a perfectionist and I'm so OCD, especially when it comes to kind of my art. And I think that's the fear in me, is that I can be as prepped and planned and organized and do as good a job as I can, but there are things that are out of my control that means that it might not quite work out the way that I want it to, or it might not go in the direction that I want it to. Yeah. And I guess like in terms of kind of like, you know, creating a set, and it's one of the things that I sort of will say to less experienced DJs, is that you learn your craft and about how to take that set when things aren't maybe going the way that you want it to. And that comes with experience.
Yeah.
And so if, you know, the crowd isn't responding the way that I want to, or they're not kind of like vibing in the way that I need them to, I know how to change direction or to change that in order to kind of get them on board. Whereas a less experienced DJ who hasn't maybe had as much experience dealing with the crowd, you know, lots of bedroom DJs, lots of kind of new DJs, they won't have that same kind of level of experience of like, oh, when things really are not going well, how you level that up and change it around.
Exactly. It only comes with the experience of having exactly that situation and dealing with it and seeing what works and what doesn't work, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, trust me, in all my years of DJing, there have definitely been times where I have, you know, flopped a little bit and been like, God, what am I going to do here? This isn't working. And you really have to think of your thing. And there's also, you know, other outside factors where equipment can go wrong and will go wrong and has gone wrong on many occasions for me. Things have stopped working. Cables have stopped working. Like, I was playing on Saturday night. I mean, it didn't happen to me, thankfully, but the mixer blew up halfway through the set and they had to change the mixer. This was at Dolson Superstore, which is obviously like a very well-known established club. And they didn't have one like just next to it, because you don't expect a mixer to blow up halfway through the set. So they had to go out to the back, pull out a new mixer. Obviously, by this time this has all happened, it's like probably 15 minutes it's taken them to like unplug everything, get a new mixer. The music's gone dead. And from there, the DJ then has to completely start the crowd again at like peak time. This was probably like 1-2 o'clock in the morning. It was until 5. Like, what do you do with that?
Yeah,
you've like got a crowd buzzing and then all of a sudden music's gone dead. It's gone dead for 15 minutes. Everyone's bored, they've left, you've got an empty dance floor, you've got to start again. Like, you have to know how to like deal with that. And I think a lot of people, especially like a lot of new DJs who've maybe less experienced, won't have had those kind of things happen to them before. And the first time it happens, you're like
mortified.
Panic, yeah. So much mortified. Don't know. And it's not your fault.
Of course.
But the thing is, the crowd will always think it is. If the music goes dead in a set, the crowd will look at the DJ, you know. And it's like, someone's just pulled, I mean, it's happened to me quite several times, like someone's pulled the plug out.
Yeah.
They've like tripped over or something. They've pulled the plug out and then everything's gone dead. And you're like, it's not my fault. And then we'll look, ooh, isn't it you? And it's like, ah, what do I do? How do I recover from this?
But then where the personality comes out, right? That's when, you know, you got to own the room and be like, right.
Yeah, completely. You've got to own it.
How did you get into DJing?
It was an accident. A very happy accident. I was a singer. That's where I first started. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to go to drama college after I finished college doing musical theatre. And I was, it's really hard to get into drama college. I got a spot in the college I wanted to in London, which was really hard. There was like thousands of applicants, 30 spaces. Yay, I got my spot. And then didn't get a scholarship. So I was like, deferred my entry, tried to get my scholarship the year after, still didn't get a scholarship.
Mm.
In which time I became an air stewardess and did all these kind of like weird and wonderful jobs in the meantime. And then still didn't get a scholarship. So I was like, what do I do now? Because I couldn't afford to go. It's a private college. So during this time, I kind of like was singing in a band, like just a function band, and then also doing some session work. So doing some vocals for this producer down in Brighton, and I was really enjoying working in a studio, but I wasn't enjoying singing other people's songs.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I want to do my own thing. I don't want to be a puppet. I want to be a puppeteer.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was talking to him. He had this amazing studio in Brighton. So I said, look, you know, I'd like to be able to write or produce or like make my own songs. So he said, great, I'll show you a bit around the studio. So he did. And then I went and did a short course, and then I decided to actually go to university and study music production. So I kind of changed my tack, still going into music. And for me, it was always about house music. Like from, I mean, probably about the age of 14, me and my sister would be listening to like Kiss FM and like recording stuff on tape, and like listening to house music. And she took me out clubbing when I was 14, underage clubbing in like 97, which was obviously... well, was one of the best years for house music, in my opinion.
Totally.
So I kind of had this love of house music. So I went to do music production. For me, it was always about wanting to kind of do house music and house vocals. And then I guess I kind of realized if I want to be a good producer, I need to know of dance music. I need to know what works on the dance floor. And I need to know what a DJ looks for. So I decided to kind of get some decks, learn how to DJ just for the purpose of kind of understanding the music better. And then realized quite quickly, especially back then when there were very few female DJs, mm-hmm. especially very few queer female DJs, I suddenly started getting booked. And I was like, oh, so everyone else that I'm at uni with is working part of bar, and I'm earning four times the amount of money that they are for doing 2 hours DJing. Like, I'm sounds down with good, this. Yeah. So I kind of, you know, made my way through uni, like paid my way through uni DJing at kind of bars in Brighton, and then also in a function band at the weekends. And then 20 odd years later,
here I am, and you were like, oh,
as a full-time DJ. So it was, a happy accident.
So you didn't get the scholarship, you said, three times, right?
No, it was twice. Twice I didn't get a scholarship.
You know, I think many people would be, you know, like, I needed that scholarship, that's what I was aiming for, and then didn't get it, and then was like, would be, you know, such bad news, like, what do I do now, kind of thing. And actually, you took that opportunity. You were like, well, actually, I still want to go into music. I still want to be doing this singing. I still want to be, but I need to learn a little bit more. And that just took you on a slightly different path, but you're still, I guess, surrounded by the industry and the people that you would have been back then.
Yeah, I had this kind of like strange moment recently. Like, as a DJ now, there seems to be kind of this really big thing now, especially on the queer scene, which is great and I'm so here for it, is that we often have dancers and go-go dancers that will be there whilst we're performing, which obviously just adds this kind of like extra fun element to DJ sets. And I do it at my parties, and pretty much most of the clubs that I play at now have like go-go dancers. And these go-go dancers are professionally trained dancers, some of whom went to the drama school that I went to, or I was supposed to go to. So it's kind of weird. I have this sort of like weird moment, and I'll have conversations with them and be like, oh yeah, I was supposed to be at, you know. And they're like, oh wow, so I should have been the other side where they are. Mm. But yeah, I'm the DJ side. And it's funny how like my life has kind of come this like full circle, and I'm still surrounded by the people that I probably would have met if I'd gone the other direction, but just on the other side.
Yeah.
So it's funny how kind of like these crossed paths, sliding doors, still end up with the same people around me, I guess.
Yeah, not exactly the same outcome, but kind of the same environment, same vibes.
And I think if I look at myself now, like had I, you know, I've always been as queer as queer, and like had I gone to drama college, I think I probably would have ended up doing what these people are doing, and instead of going down the traditional kind of like musical theatre route, which is what I would have been trained in, I would have been frustrated by the kind of the way that that industry is, and I would have broken free and gone and done something else that would have probably been a lot more involved in the queer scene. So I would have ended up probably where they are, as in doing like go-go dancing for like queer clubs and kind of queer performance stuff and queer performance art and drag stuff. And I think I would have ended up there. I've ended up here with these people.
I guess back then, you know, when you were thinking about like the scholarship and stuff, you could have never imagined where you are now.
Absolutely not. And you know, when I didn't get my scholarship the first time around, I was heartbroken. Mm. And obviously it was like straight out of college. All of my friends were going to university. I should have gone to drama college. I was then not going to drama college, stuck in Horsham when all of my friends had left, dealing with a horrendous breakup with my first girlfriend from like 4 years. So I was like so heartbroken on so many levels, and was just like, what am I going to do? And that's when I actually became an air stewardess, which was also one of the best things I ever did in my life. It was so much fun, and I'm so glad that I did it. And then I didn't get my, and I was like, okay, I'll get a scholarship next year. Deferred my entry, still no scholarship. And I was just like, what am I going to do now? But by this point, I had already, you know, during this time been like, well, I'm going to go and join a covers band whilst I'm waiting to go to uni. Mm. And I'm going to go and start like trying to find music stuff that I can do, and was going to, you know, sign up for drama stuff, but didn't really have the time because of being an air stewardess. So I still had this massive thirst to just want to sing and do that in any way that I possibly could. And it wasn't that when I didn't get my scholarship, I suddenly knew what I was going to do next. It was a very organic thing that happened. Yeah. And it was a very organic process. And then within 2 years, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to uni. And yes, obviously I was 2 years older and not going to uni when all my friends went, but I was going to uni to do music still, but in a very different capacity. And I think also what's interesting to say, not that maybe it makes any difference, is that had I gone to drama college, I probably would have been the majority, because most people at drama college are girls, mm-hmm. a very large proportion. There's kind of like less, I mean, that may have changed now, but yet when I went to do music production, I was one of two girls in a class of 30. And then when I went to do my final degree top up, I was one of two girls in 90.
Which was a better thing for you?
I think so. And I think the reason being is like throughout my life, I have always done the things that boys do.
Yeah.
And for me, it was like, why? Because I'm a girl, can't I do that?
Mm-hmm.
And when I was at school, I played basketball, and I ended up playing basketball for Southeast England, but there wasn't a girls team in my school. So I played for the boys team, and we would go to basketball matches, and the boys that we were playing against would laugh because they were like, you've got a girl on your team. Little did they know that I played for England. So I would run rings around them. And then at the end of it, they'd be like, that's not allowed. You've got to find out whether she's, surely that's disqualified. So for me, there's, and that's always, like, pretty much most of the things I did at school, like, I always did the boys' things. And for me, it almost made me want to do it better.
Yeah.
Because it was like, just because I'm a girl, I want to prove to you that I can do this better than you mm-hmm. can. Because this is a boys' thing, but I can still do this. So I think it actually really did spur me, knowing that I was one of the only girls on my course, to be like, well, I'm going to do this for the girls.
Yeah. Do it even
and
better.
And do it better. And actually, I was one of three people in 90 that got a first.
Awesome.
So
awesome. Congratulations.
So yeah, I think maybe that did really spur me on.
Yeah.
To prove myself more.
Yeah.
And I guess that's maybe also one of the reasons, or one of the things that's kind of spurred me on quite a lot in my career, because now definitely I mean, it still is, there's still a massive disparity, but there is more women in like DJing, the music industry, than there was before. But for real, when I first started, like, there was so few girls and there was so few kind of female representation mm-hmm. on the DJ scene, yeah. on the music scene. So I kind of like being that anomaly,
mm-hmm.
and I like kind of like holding the torch in a feminist kind of way to prove that women can do it just as well and be just as good.
Yeah. Or better.
And it's something that, yeah, or better. And it is something that has really kind of like lit a fire up my ass pretty much all of my life. That's something that's been something that has kind of spurred me to do better.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
I totally identify with that as well. I think that's part of the reason why I got into tech, because no girls were doing it. And, you know, if you're one of many, you just kind of blend into the background, you know?
I like being special. Yeah.
Being special, being different, and being like, hey, yes.
Yeah, totally.
And so now you've got an event that you started some time ago. How many years has it been going now?
The club night that I run now has been 6 years, I think. Okay. It is. Yeah. And it is a club night for queer women, mm-hmm. like women with trans and non-binary inclusive. Mm-hmm. And it's a support, a platform to kind of, you know, to support what I would call Flint artist, which is female, lesbian, intersex, non-binary, trans.
Yeah.
Is that right? I think. So everyone that we book, everyone that's involved, apart from one person who is one of my resident DJs, who's a gay guy, but every single person that is photographer, designer, like the door person, every DJ that we mm-hmm. book, all of the dancers, everyone is Flinter. So it's not just a club night for queer women.
Yeah.
It is a platform that creates a space for championing Flinter artists as well. And again, like I said, I think for me, definitely, because I started in the industry as like one of only a few handful of women that I kind of knew, it's always been something that has run very deeply in all of the work that I've done in terms of like my career, is creating spaces and platforms for other women and giving them the voice and the platform and space to be able to do what they need to do as well. And like, you know, off the back of it, I did actually start DJ lessons and workshops and stuff as well, because I realized particularly that there was a lack of representation at the lower levels. Mm. So there's really big female DJs out there, but there kind of wasn't that many grassroots. And obviously for me as a promoter that's booking just a small club night, I needed grassroots yep. DJs that I could book as well. And there just weren't enough of them, especially POC DJs, female POC DJs. So I was kind of like, right, POC to the front. I want to see you first. Queer DJ to the front. I want to see you first.
Silly question. What's POC?
People of colour.
Oh, I thought it was in a yeah music context.
For me, I was like, okay, well, there aren't any. What are we going to do? Well, let's make some. Mm.
Yeah.
Let's create some workshops and spaces that we can give people a platform so that they can start to learn.
I think that's hugely important, because a lot of women just have no idea, or a lot of people have no idea where to even go and start. And especially underrepresented groups also kind of, I guess, quite intimidated to go to like the standard kind of music school, university kind of courses and stuff like that.
And I think also from the experiences that I've given and from other people's experiences, that the girls who I've taught or who I know have been taught by other women have all said that they much preferred that experience, because when they felt that they were in a room full of men or they felt they were being taught by a man, there was always something that felt slightly patronizing about yeah. it. And they felt like any question might be a silly question, that they would look at them like they were stupid. Mm. Whereas when you're on a room full of women, you kind of take that away. And they just felt much more comfortable. And I do think there is something to be said, especially when you're in environments that are predominantly male environments or male industries, that if you have a collective of women that are there pushing you forward or being able to teach you, it just makes it that much easier yeah. and that much more appealing.
I think it's just a vibe as well, right? Generally, other women just tend to be less threatened, like just vibe off each other and be like, you know, we want to see you do well.
So I played at a festival a couple of weeks ago that was called Risen, and it's a new festival. It's the first year new festival in London that was just women. So the entire lineup was female, trans and non-binary. But not only that, everyone behind the scenes, from the staging, the artist liaison, the marketing, like all of the people that did the lighting and everything, they were all female, non-binary, trans. So this whole festival that was exclusively just female, mm-hmm. non-binary, trans. And it was such a gorgeous atmosphere.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the audience was a complete mix. But there was just something about the camaraderie that the kind of women have, and like, hey, yeah, we're here doing this together.
Yeah.
That I feel like, maybe you get with boys, but I definitely feel there was this, I don't know, there was just this, you could feel there was mm-hmm. something different about it. And also what was quite interesting is you walk around and the girls were absolutely shelling it. There was no like half-hearted, like soft music. It was all like, boom, this is hard-ass music, have it. And I don't know what it is about the girls that almost like want to play harder because they want to prove that they can play hard. I don't know, but it was hard.
Yeah.
It was everywhere. It was like hard, fast, dirty, nasty awesome. Music. And it was great. I'm so here for it.
During your DJ years, have you ever had a bit of a wobble moment and thought, oh, this is not what I set out to do, or it's not for me, or something been thrown in the tracks?
Definitely. For about 10 years. So
a wobble decade.
So, yeah, 10-year wobble. When I left uni, I started working for an events company. And then I was still DJing kind of like, you know, on the side. Always wanted to be a like, DJ full time, but it's not as easy as that. Ended up getting a job in London, moved to London. And as soon as I moved, I got made redundant. And I was like, shit, what am I going to do? And walked into a bar. Ouch. No, I'm joking. walked into a bar. My friend's girlfriend was the manager of. And she said, look, you know, do you want some bar work while you're trying to find another job? And I said, well, actually, can you give me some DJ work? Because I've never worked in a bar, but I can DJ. She's like, yeah, great. Handed me to an agent and she took me on, but it was pop music. So I did a couple of sets. She loved me. Before I know it, within the space of about 6 months, I was playing like five nights a week. And the money was great, but it was like 9 hours a night, 6 to 9 hours a night, playing pop music in the West End. And me being like an absolute like house head and loving my kind of like dirty underground house music, that was hard.
Yeah.
But I had, you know, been unemployed for a while. I'd got myself into quite a lot of debt, had a lot of student debt, had just moved to London, was kind of living well above my means and just was like, ah. And the problem was, is that my agent wouldn't really let me take time off work because she would always threaten that if I did, then I'd lose my residency. And especially the kind of like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday residencies that I had, they were so hard to come by and I needed those gigs. So if I wanted to do a gig of house music, because my name wasn't established in London, then I would maybe be getting 50 quid and, you know, a packet of crisps and a couple of drinks tokens. And it would usually be on a Friday and Saturday night, which is where I would, you know, earn quite a lot more than that.
Yeah.
But with my agent gig, I couldn't just take off half a night or like a couple of hours. I had to be there for the whole 6 to 9 right. hours, which was the whole night. So I couldn't do the gigs that I wanted to. I was kind of financially locked into the gigs that I was doing. But without doing those £50 gigs, I couldn't then start establishing myself and make a name for myself. So I was in this kind of like catch 22 situation. And that catch 22 situation lasted for 10 years.
Wow.
So I was, you know, DJing 6 nights a week, 9 hours a night behind the decks, coming home, doing 5 or 6 more hours of work, getting a couple of hours of sleep, then going back to work again. And obviously this was an incredibly unhealthy and unhappy routine because I was DJing pretty much every night of the week, apart from maybe one, which would just be spent asleep. I didn't get to see anyone. I couldn't really socialize. I was missing everyone's birthdays and, you know, whatever. And it just got to the point where, yes, I was actually a full-time DJ. And yes, I was earning a decent living and I was living in London and supporting myself. I was so miserable and I was so unhappy. And I just thought, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? I hate it. And I really hated it. And I hated the music and I hated playing top 40 chart music, which just wasn't me at all. And I felt so ungrateful because everyone that would be like, oh my God, you're a full-time DJ. That's amazing. And I was like, I hate it. And I know that so many people would have just been so blessed to be in my position. And I didn't know why I felt so ungrateful. And I felt bad for feeling ungrateful. And then basically something flipped and I got ill. And I ended up getting really sick and was like physically, mentally, just my whole body was just exhausted. And I was burnt out. I just completely burnt out. And I ended up going to the doctors, being treated for all sorts of things, and then got fibromyalgia, which I have now. And then got signed off work.
Wow.
And they were like, you have to quit. You cannot continue like this. So that was like, shit, this is a real wake up call. So I quit. I just quit and signed on, went on Universal Credit, was, you know, like, what am I going to do? And then within the space of a couple of months, like, boom, my DJ career actually took off. My real career, my music career that I've been working on underneath all this DJ, like, pop stuff, suddenly started to blossom because I had the energy and the time to be able to do it. And that was such a pinnacle time. It was like a massive turning point. And it was such a shame that I had got to that point that I'd got myself sick and I'd made myself ill. But then suddenly it all started to happen. And that, and it's been like maybe 2 or 3 years that since that point.
Wow.
And in those 2 or 3 years, it's just been such a snowball. And people are like, oh, you know, like, you're really suddenly taking off. It's like, it's only taken me like 22 years. They didn't see all of the stuff before. I mean, it's that, that age-old thing, like, with the Blessed Madonna. Everyone's like, oh, it only took her, like, 10 years to become an overnight success. And it's true. Like, I've been working on it for so long, but it wasn't until I had to quit my job, as in the pop stuff, which to me was a job. It wasn't my career. It was a job. It was a means to an end. It was, like, making ends meet, making my money. I wasn't passionate about it. I didn't love it. And through all that time doing that, there was this like, what am I doing? Am I doing the right thing? Should I be a DJ? Is this what it's all about? I'm sure it isn't. Surely there's something else. And I always had these kind of like my sights pinned on DJing on Berlin and DJing on Ibiza and DJing around the world and playing all these parties I want to. And I still know that I'm not where I want to be in my career. But this month I'm DJing in Berlin and I'm DJing on Ibiza. And I'm take a chair and remind yourself and look back and go, remember where you were and remember where you are now.
And it's just small steps, right? Like, as long as you're moving the needle to where you want to be, then that's it.
Totally.
It's just such a shame, that like for that 10 years, it took your body to literally shut down. For you to be like,
totally.
Oh, okay, this isn't healthy for me. Because your mind has literally stressed itself out so much because you weren't doing what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then exhausted yourself physically by doing all of those days, all of those hours, not focusing on that. I think there's so many people now that get to that point. And we shouldn't, we shouldn't actually get to that point. But it's really hard to listen to your body.
Yeah, I mean, the body keeps the score completely. And you know, my body was just like giving up on me. And you know, I still have fibromyalgia. It's not ever going to go away now. And, you know, I have to deal with the exhaustion. And so, you know, when I do gigs at a weekend, it does take me 2 or 3 days. I have to stay in bed and rest and recover. But I'm now in the lucky position that I have that time. I can look after myself. I listen to my body. I've got a couple of days to recover after a weekend. And my career, I love, and I am so passionate about it. And I sort of like almost kick myself that I feel like I lost 10 years. But at the same time, I learned so much during that time. And actually, I learned so much about DJing because trust me, DJing pop music for 9 hours and never playing the same song twice and having that kind of crowd in front of you, it really taught me. It really taught me. And it really taught me how to, like, you know, craft my sets and learn how to kind of like hold back and play what when and, you know, read an audience. And I really learned my craft there.
If you could leave the listeners with a piece of advice today, what would you tell them?
Always follow your heart and you'll trust your instincts. If something doesn't feel right, change it. If something doesn't sit with you, and something isn't flowing or something isn't working, change it. I wish I'd have done that before I got 10 years of the game, like, and really followed my heart and did the thing that I really wanted to do. But now I am.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've only got one life. Do the thing that makes you happy and do the thing that you love. Yeah. Whether that's as a career or whether that's as a hobby, but just pursue it.
Definitely. Definitely. Because you never know where it will take you.
Exactly.
As you know, every guest that comes on the show gets to give me a dare. Have you thought about one?
Go and have a DJ lesson.
Okay.
or find someone with decks and just and have a little play on some decks.
Mm-hmm. I think we've got some decks at work. I'm sure someone will be able to teach me. So yeah, thanks for being on the show, and thanks for sharing your wisdom and your story, because I think a lot of people can identify with it, having some stuff that just doesn't go the way that is planned, and you know, everything works out in the end.
Oh, I really enjoyed that. Thank you.
All right, so I put a message out at work to see if anyone DJ'd and if anyone could help me. And luckily, Tene reached out. I think next week we're going to spend like about an hour. I think he's going to bring his stuff in. So yeah, I'm excited. Let's see how it goes. So that was an interesting experience. So last night, yeah, Tane and I spent some time just looking at the mixing desk, talked to me about the beats per minute, talked to me about, you know, how a lot of it is a lot of prep at home before you actually get on the decks, which I didn't know at all. And obviously really, really minute movements on the buttons on the mixing desk. And I don't know why I'm doing hand movements as I'm telling you that, but I am, so you can visualize that. Yeah, because I always just thought that, I don't know, DJs were kind of faking like what they were doing so that they looked busy. Honestly, that's what I thought. And yeah, apparently not, because when you turn the knobs too quickly, then you get mixing like mine. Word of advice, don't do that. It doesn't sound great. I'm not overly happy with the performance of my first DJing attempt, but there's no real way for you to hear it because obviously there's copyright issues. So you'll just have to believe me that I did my best. Thanks so much for the dare, Michelle. I honestly didn't know how much was kind of involved in DJing. I mean, that sounds ridiculous because of course it's a job and of course it's going to be quite technical. But I guess I thought I would pick it up a little bit easier than I did. I found it completely overwhelming, and it's definitely not something that I'm going to do. Again, I didn't really enjoy it. I think my place is best on the dance floor, to be honest, and I promise I won't be doing requests because Tanya was letting me know how annoying that can be. I apologise to all those DJs out there where I did that. If you want to check out how the dare went down, there's a reel on Instagram for every single one of them. Follow us at _shedares and let me know if you decide to do any of them with me. I'd love to see what you get up to.